16th, 2023. Happy Valentine's Day. We will do our best to work efficiently tonight so that we can get everybody home to their families. We have our full commission here with the exception of Commissioner Darby, who has asked to be excused, but we do have a quorum, so we are able to conduct business this evening. We've got members of city staff that represent our legal department, recording, planning, and we want to thank them for the preparation that they put into this meeting so that we've got our packets ready and all the information we need to answer questions. We also want to welcome those that have joined us, both as applicants and members of the community, here to comment this evening. We always appreciate your participation in this process. It makes the process better. Our first item of business this evening is a motion to approve our agenda as printed.
Madam Chair, go ahead.
Okay. I move that we approve the agenda as printed.
Thank you, Commissioner Bevins. I will second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Our next item is to approve the minutes from our Planning Commission meeting on January 24th of 2023. I hope everybody's had a chance to review that. Any discussion or comments on that? If not, I'm ready for a motion.
I have one discussion. I didn't see that they were marked draft in the packet. Does that need to be corrected before we approve?
They do. Are they not?
Yeah, he's right.
Oh, yeah, they're not.
Just didn't.
Maybe I didn't see it because of the watermark, but yeah, I can't see it right now. So Madam Chair, I'd like to move to approve the minutes with the amendment that they be marked draft in the before the approval.
They can be approved. They just need to be corrected.
Okay. To be approved as corrected, as noted.
Okay. Is that sufficient? We're happy with that, staff? Okay. I will second that motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Okay, staff, do you have any business for us this evening?
I don't believe so. I think we're ready to go.
All right. Planning Commission, I attended the City Council meeting last week, including their work session. I actually listened to that one online. Just wanted to tell you a little bit about what they were discussing. They are collaborating to pool resources to meet a state requirement for stormwater media that just allows them to meet this state requirement but not have to generate their own media materials. So they're collaborating with Salt Lake County for that. They reviewed impact fees with relation to transportation and waste. And then this is my soapbox and the reason I'm on the Planning Commission. I've heard about impact fees for our recreation and our parks. I still do not understand why the state does not allow impact fees for education. So I will leave that there. The commission will be interested to know that during the public comment portion of their meeting, they do allow at the beginning of their meeting anybody interested to comment on any topic. They did get a lot of comment on the RISE project that we heard, I think, about a month ago. That's the high-density one with respect to the River Bottoms Business Park. And then additionally, they heard the D&D rezone that we heard at our last meeting. They did approve that to move forward, so I believe that we will see an official plan for that property sometime in the near future. And that is all I have from that meeting. Who is signed up to do it next time? Okay, thank you, Commissioner Gedge. We'll look forward to your report in 2 weeks. Were there any other comments from the Planning Commission this evening? Okay, then we will move into our administrative public hearings. For those that have joined us this evening, the staff will give us a report on each of these items. If the applicant is present, they are welcome at that time after the report has been given to add anything to the report that they feel is relevant. Then we will have a public comment on each item where any member of the community that would like to address the commission on that item will have an opportunity to do so. They'll have 3 minutes to come again to the podium, state their name and where they reside for our records, and then present any information that they've brought on that particular topic. The public hearing will be open for each item. Once it's closed, the commission will take over, and that will conclude the time in which we will receive information from the public on that particular item. So our first item this evening is the Daybreak Village 9 Plat 6 Preliminary Subdivision, and Greg has our staff report.
Thank you. This application is for, Commissioner Hollis said, the village, Daybreak Village 9 Plat 6 subdivision is located about as far north and west as you can get in the developed part of Daybreak. It's approximately 6,900 or so west along South Jordan Parkway, as seen on this map. There aren't a lot of homes out there, but there have been several other subdivisions that have been approved, and there's a few homes to the south, but really not very many to the none that I can think of that are actually to the east of it, and obviously none to the west. And it's as they continue to develop out there, there will be more and more homes constructed. The project is 12.52 acres, and it contains 90 residential lots and 5 park lots, and also associated public and private rights of way. The residential density of this proposal is 7.1 units per acre of gross density and 11.8 units per acre net density, which are both consistent with the PC zone and the community structure plan for Daybreak. The proposed lot sizes range from 1,400 square feet to 9,151 is the largest lot in the subdivision, with an average lot size of about 3,675. The proposed subdivision also proposes a variety of lot types, which include townhomes, twin homes, and single-family detached dwellings as well. The design guidelines for this subdivision that they're proposing will use the same design guidelines that that have been approved for all the Village 9 subdivisions to this point. So nothing will change on the design guidelines. I don't have anything else to add. If you have any questions, you can. The applicant is here as well, and I can answer questions too.
I have a couple of questions before we turn to the applicant. Can you remind me what goes into the calculation for the net density? Is that removing all the park lots and the roads?
It's only the residential lots are counted. The area of the residential lots are counted. Yes.
Okay. Is every unit required to have 2 off-street parking spots? And then for the twin homes, is that 4?
Right. Each unit has 2 off-street parking, okay. a 2-car garage.
Commissioners, questions?
Yeah, so, Greg, you said that the address is generally located in your report. You also said approximately. Is there any first time I've seen that phraseology in our reports. Is there any concern with not having a specific address for this property, or it just hasn't been assigned yet? I mean,
it shouldn't be approximate. It should be general, because all the lots are labeled with addresses already. So.
Okay, so it's not to be determined at a later date?
No.
Okay,
no.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Would the applicant like to add anything to the staff report at this time, or at least introduce yourself to us?
Can I introduce myself? I'm Tyson Taft with Larry H. Miller Group, representing the developer. I don't have anything to add. Greg gave a very detailed representation of the plat.
Okay. Thank you very much. We really do appreciate when applicants are present in case questions come up during public comment. So at this time, I'm going to open up this item to public comment. If you've joined us in person to speak to this issue, we'd invite you to come to the podium at this time. We will then also extend that opportunity to anybody who has joined us on our online platform. Is there anyone in our auditorium this evening that would like to address the commission on this item? Okay, we'll turn to our Zoom platform. Do we have anybody online? All right, if you've joined us this evening and you would like to speak to this item, we just ask that you would please turn on your camera, give us a physical wave, and I'll give you the floor. Okay, I'm not seeing anybody online, so I'm going to close the public comment on this item and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, is there any further questions or discussion that needs to happen on this item? Please.
One question for staff. When is Transjordan likely to close down, just because it's pretty close to the northern border?
I don't know if we have a really exact date, but I think they've indicated to us that it would be anywhere from probably 15 to 20 years before they close down. So okay. Just depends on how much garbage the area generates over the next, as more people move in, it may be quicker than projected. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Do you have any concerns along those lines?
It's not a conditional use permit or anything to where
You can look at that.
I'm assuming it's marketed. Well, people will know. Obviously, they'll be visiting and they'll realize there's a facility within a certain amount of feet. But I'm just wondering, with other properties we've seen with misleading marketing, which was on previous ownership than the current applicant, but just to make sure that people are fully disclosed that there is a current landfill within proximity of this development.
Unless that's a reporting requirement, yeah. I don't know that.
At least it's in the minutes now.
There you go.
Okay.
All right. I think we're ready for a motion then.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion, please.
Please.
Based on the staff report and testimony given this evening, I move that we, the Planning Commission, approve project number PLPP2022-00175, subject to the following, that all South Jordan City requirements are met prior to recording the plat.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion? Okay, I will second that motion. Could we get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Starks?
Yes.
And Commissioner Gatwell?
Aye.
And Commissioner Bench.
Yes.
Okay. This item passes 5-0 this evening. Mr. Taft, thank you again for joining us this evening. All right, our next item is the Shop Inc. Office Warehouse Site Plan and Conditional Use Permit, and Greg again has our staff report.
Okay, thank you. this is a conditional use and site plan in one. One application. The site is located at 581 South Redwood Road, just south of the Unique Auto Body, and just north of Sparkles Car Wash along Redwood. The proposal requires a conditional use permit because the type of uses in the building. Require that by the code. It is proposed to be, it's an office warehouse type, but they also have some minor assembly and so forth going on inside the building. The business is an HVAC ductwork business that they design and assemble the ductwork, and then it gets shipped out to their customers to be used in commercial and residential uses. The director of planning had determined that the warehouse fabrication assembly qualifies as equipment repair and service, which is the use that would be allowed with the conditional use permit in the site. The building itself is a two-story building. It's got two stories of office. The office area between the both floors totals about almost just under 4,000 square feet. And the rest of the building is used for the warehouse portion where the assembly occurs. And it's the bulk of the building there. The one concern we had as a possible detrimental effect that this business could bring to the area would be noise coming from a compressor that the business uses. They have chosen to locate originally they were proposing to locate it exterior of the building being enclosed, but they've now chosen to move it to the inside of the building, moving it to the inside of the building, and it's partially enclosed in there as well. The decibel levels at source were measured, and you find that also in your staff report. But at the source, they were about 66 decibels, and which is similar to a running car. However, by locating the compressor within the building and at a distance of 163 feet, approximately away from the nearest residential unit to the east. That the decibel level drops to about 31 decibels, and which is similar to whispering or a running refrigerator. So the possible detrimental effect has been mitigated by locating that inside the building. Also, based on the use that's required to have 26 parking spaces. They show 29 on their site, so meeting the requirements for parking. The site will be landscaped. Let's see if I got... There's the site plan in that picture. The building is pushed to the street toward Redwood Road and to Andover Road, something the staff has asked for, and in the code it's along Redwood Road. Especially, we like to have the buildings closer to the road. There's no parking in between the landscaping and the buildings. They are going to modify the park strip and sidewalk along Redwood Road as required by code to have a 12-foot park strip and a 8-foot sidewalk. It's in the same alignment with the across Andover Road to the north with the unique auto body as well. The landscaping has trees and shrubs there's also but no turf shown on this. That meets our water efficient landscaping requirements as well by not having the turf and to have water-wise landscaping otherwise is around. There are bushes and shrubs that will be greenery, but just no turf. We think that this business is appropriate and will be a good neighbor to all the other businesses and the residents around it. So staff is recommending approval.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
Also, it did go to the art committee for review, and I brought the materials board, so you can all see it. Commissioner Bevins was there to also look at it at the meeting. And it was a positive recommendation from the Architecture Review Committee to approve this.
Okay, thank you, Greg. You answered my question about the park strip. I could see from your aerial map that neighbors to the north definitely had a wider one than to the south. So is that the plan as things develop along there to impose that standard?
Yeah, it's been in that the Redwood Road mixed use zones have been in place since the late 90s, and so there has been a time when we weren't enforcing that requirement, but for the last about 8 or 9 years we thought that was part of the code written. We should be enforcing it and making them do that. So it's happening with all new development now, and so there's quite a few other areas that don't have, you know, obviously they were developed either prior to the Redwood Road zones, which came around in 1997, I believe, and so there's still some parts of Redwood Road that don't have that, but we think it's a good look, especially now with the seven lanes of traffic on Redwood. It gives a pedestrian a lot more confidence that they can walk safely when they're 12 feet away from the road.
So. Certainly. Can you comment on the compressor? The report seemed to indicate that initially the plans were to locate it outside. Was the move to bringing it indoors initiated by staff pointing out this concern with sound?
I don't believe so. We point out the concern with sound, but it was their idea to move it inside because okay. they were showing it on the outside. Even on this landscape plan, it still shows a little tiny box on this sitting out there. But it's this is the original plan that got submitted. They didn't change the landscape plan to show it, the box gone. But that's where it was going to be, and it was going to be enclosed. But I think they realized that they could have a lot less sound. It might have been somewhere. I don't know what they did their own measurements and so forth, and I think they realized that putting it inside reduced it so significantly that there was almost no sound at all. So,
is the applicant here this evening?
Yes, he is. Okay. He's right.
Commissioners, questions for staff before we invite the applicant forward. Would you like to come and introduce yourself, please? Go ahead, Steve.
I'm assuming, based on what you just told us about where they were planning on putting it, this is not considered portable. It's not got a portable air compressor equipment.
No, it's. Commissioner Bevins, did you visited their site,
yeah.
Their current site? Maybe it's probably the same type of. It's a new one, obviously, but it's not portable.
It's not portable.
it's
okay. And the reason I was asking is I found the Salt Lake County regulations on noise. So I was looking at first for city and then for county, and they give an exemption for portable mechanical equipment between specific hours. So, okay.
What is the noise level allowed for a portable?
Well, I don't know what the maximum is, but it just says that it's exempt from the main decibel levels, maximum decibel levels, between those hours, between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m. And then they put different restrictions for motor vehicles, and you know that's why freeways and highways will be louder and allowed.
All right, Mr. Helland.
Thank you, Commissioner. My name is Tyler Howland. I'm here representing the owner, Shoppy Inc., and am happy to answer any questions you may have.
I do have a question. Is your compressor usage intermittent throughout the day?
Yes, it's a constant feed, but it's going to be used at the most maybe 30 minutes, and that's cumulative from operating hours. This specific compressor, I included the specs, and I think they're part of your packet. It's one of the quietest compressors that you can actually purchase. It's a rotary screw compressor, which historically those are a lot quieter than the compressor you might be thinking of that sits in a lot of our garages. And, you know, our kids go running away whenever we turn it on because they can't stand the sound. But at its peak, it's running at 66 decibels, and that's when I'm standing next to it and it's operating and running. When staff kind of indicated some concern for noise with neighbors, we ultimately just made the decision to pull it inside, realizing that having it in, within an enclosure would significantly reduce the noise that was being carried to the residential neighborhood to the east.
And I assume that you'll follow OSHA standards with respect to your employees and noises that they'll be exposed to.
Yeah, we're significantly below that. Commissioner Bevins had an opportunity to come out and kind of tour the facility. OSHA standard, anything above 85 decibels is considered harmful, and you have to start providing hearing protection. Understand, though, that the decibel level is logarithmic. So, like, when you go from 84 to 85 decibels, you're not increasing it by one decibel. You're increasing it by a multiple. And so the difference between 66 and 85 decibels is even pretty significant. We don't even come close to that with any of the equipment that is being used, the compressor being the loudest.
Commissioners, questions for Mr. Howland? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Nope.
Okay, all right. At this time, then, we're going to open up the floor to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to address the commission on this item, we invite you to come forward. Is there anyone here this evening that would like to address the commission on this item? Okay, we'll go to our online format. If you've joined us online to address the commission on this item, we'd ask that you please turn on your camera, give us a physical wave, and we'll turn over the floor to you. Okay, I'm not seeing anybody online either, so I'm going to close public comment on this item and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, is there further discussion that needs to happen on this item?
Maybe just one question for staff. I didn't get a chance to look this up specifically in the code. Is equipment, so in our motion ready, we have wording that says to enable or to allow this permit for equipment, light repairs, and service. Do we define that anywhere?
It's not defined in our code specifically. That's why we had the director of planning give his opinion and of what they are doing if it fits under equipment repair and service. And so they do provide, they are servicing equipment because they're kind of manufacturing or putting together the ductwork and so forth like that. So that's why we really don't have any. The sections of the code in the railroad road zones have not been incorporated into the uses section of our code. It's they kind of off by themselves, and there's not a lot of defining terms in there, so for those.
Okay, so
he determined that it the use that it best matched was the one that they're going with.
And I think for the current use case, that makes a lot of sense. One of the things that, because this stays with the property, not just with the owner, if another owner were to come in, take over the property, and do something that they're qualifying or is reasonably considered equipment, light repairs, and service, and instead of noise being a condition or an issue, maybe what... emissions from the building because of some process, repair process. How would the city address that?
I think if it's a different business overall completely, we'd look to see if it qualifies as this with the same conditional use permit. But if they have, if there are different factors that would need to be mitigated, detrimental effects, we could also require them to mitigate those new detrimental effects as well.
As part of the building or as part of the business permit?
Right. And I think when it comes to emissions, if they were like doing something with cars or something else, whatever inside, I think OSHA standards would probably outweigh anything we could come up with as well.
Thank you.
I do have one thing that I would like included in the motion, or at least to be discussed. I want to note that the landscape plan did not reflect the update about the compressor or indicate in the motion that we're approving this if the sound concern associated with the compressor is mitigated. Just to call that out specifically, since that's...
You could also say that it's the site plan that you're doing, because the site plan itself, though I don't know if we can get that back up on the screen, it shows that internal. So,
okay.
Because they were required to submit a new site plan showing that. So.
That was the only concern that I had. Any other discussion, comments? Is somebody willing to try and tackle that motion?
Well, I just real quick want to say, I know we mentioned that I did have the opportunity to go down to the facility. They turned on all of the machinery. You could have a regular conversation at normal voice levels, and there was no issue. So it's very quiet. There were not a ton of employees on site making noise. I had the concern of sound, but after going and touring the facility and seeing all of their machinery and their equipment, I don't have any concern. I think they'll be very willing to mitigate that and be good neighbors.
So just follow up on that, just question. And so is this business currently in operation, and they're just getting it just now to be legal, basically?
No, so they operate in the ballpark district right now.
Yeah, they're in
separate location.
Yes. Yeah, they're in Salt Lake, in separate location. Maybe to add some comfort to another business coming in here in the future, they've been at their current location around 100 years, I believe. So it's been family-owned the whole time, same family. So they're just moving out here because there's more work to be done in the suburbs, and also I think the actual owner lives in the south end of the valley, so he wanted to be closer to his business. So moving the business here, and because of other issues that has happened in the ballpark area, he wanted to move out of that area.
So. Just wanted to make sure it wasn't already in business. But Madam Chair, I'm going to try to make a stab at a motion just to see. So based on the site plan that was presented to us this evening and the discussion that we've had regarding sound mitigation regarding the generator being placed internally, I move that we, the Planning Commission, approve application SPR 2022-00225 and PLCUP 2022-00226 for a site plan and granting a conditional use permit for equipment, light repairs, and service enclosed within a building located at 11581 South Redwood Road.
Maybe I missed it. Did we get give the audience a chance?
Yeah.
Okay. That was fast.
Yeah.
Okay. No one had. Okay. Thank you.
You really like being with us, don't you?
I did. That's great.
trying to get you home, Stephen. All right. We have a motion. Any discussion? Thank you for stating it the way you did. I think that addresses my concerns.
Because it also said within, I think, in the motion, too. So,
right. Yeah. All right. I'm going to second that then. Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Commissioner Getch?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Starks?
Yes.
Commissioner Cantwell?
Aye.
And Commissioner Brevin?
Yes.
Okay. This item passes 5-0. Mr. Hallin, please relay our appreciation to who you represent as far as being able to work with the city and mitigate this concern. We really appreciate that and your participation here this evening. All right, and we welcome you to our city, by the way, and your business. We look forward to seeing it. All right, our next item this evening is a conditional use permit for a restaurant use in the commercial corridor CC zone, and Andrew has our staff report.
Thank you, commissioners. Before you tonight, we have an application for a restaurant use. Donut Star Cafe is proposed to relocate into one of our existing tenant buildings that are just on the corner across Redwood from us out front. At 105 22 South Redwood Road into existing tenant space B. Currently, the property is zoned CC for our commercial corridor, which is the majority of the properties. The nearest R3 residential zone, the dark yellow in the corner from the rear of the building that we're discussing to that boundary line is roughly 200 feet. In between there, we have a professional office zone with an existing building buffering those two uses. The current site plan of the building has 10 existing spaces, which are noted on this site plan right now. Since this building came to in the early 2000s, give or take, it's been mainly office and retail. This would be the first restaurant use that's being proposed, which is why it requires the conditional use. To establish that and allow future uses on that property for this. The proposed floor plan, there is no drive-through in this unit or in this building to be concerned about. We believe parking is sufficient for both the requirements of the facility. It is, as multiple times as you drive by along Redwood Road, doesn't usually fill up for patrons, and there is parking in the rear of the building, which is mainly used by the employees of those tenant spaces. And we staff doesn't feel like the use would create any huge problems and recommends approval of the application.
Could you please let us or state what the required parking requirement is based on the square footage as well as now for this use with the number of tables they would have?
Their floor plan for a restaurant is one per 100 square feet, but it would also be one per four seats. With the seating that they show on their floor plan, they would need three stalls. The site itself, with the parking along the front and adjacent to Redwood and then what's in the rear of the building, is 70 stalls. The current use of the property, each has its own various requirement, which would place it around needing 104 with the current uses that are in place. However, those can also be with the martial arts studio and the dance studio, based upon square footage, they would need a higher amount, but assuming that they have seating, that does come down to the same requirement as restaurants. It's still not a huge concern with staff driving by at various times of the day. We'll see a flux as the martial arts and dance studios have their sessions. But other than allowing a restaurant to come in and causing a problem with that, we don't see an issue.
Other questions? You mentioned that they're relocating from...
We don't know where they're relocating from, but we do have the applicant and or the business owner here tonight that can speak to that.
I did have one more question. I noticed that their signage is already up.
Yes. They did get a sign permit application. It was approved. Their business license and tenant improvement application are pending results of their CUP.
Is that the normal order? Is that typical?
Not typical. Usually the business license application would come last after you've received the approvals through the TI. And your sign usually somewhere along that way. It's not required to have a sign, and so it's not necessarily part of a TI or a business license. Usually they come at the end, though.
Go ahead.
Have we had any complaints around odor that might come from this restaurant? Have we ever had complaints about fried foods? And I never know what to be concerned about, but... And I share that because it might be pleasing to some people. Might want to open up your window. And
I think they have to have proper venting in the business anyway, and as part of the building department's approval and review. And there might be odors. I mean, just a couple of buildings away is the Astro Burger. So I would imagine, they probably have more odors. But I mean. This building is not adjacent to residential units. There's another building behind it that is closer to the residential unit that blocks. So it's obviously it's much closer to Redwood than it is to residents. So
I have a question.
So I don't know if there should be. I don't think there should be an issue with that.
How does noticing happen with a commercial business like this? Are the notices sent to like the building owner, or are they sent to the tenants? Like, how does that work? Who would
sent
be notified?
To every property owner within 300 feet of the business.
Okay, so it's not necessarily the tenants; it's the
property owner. Yeah,
okay.
The other tenants in here aren't getting the notice. It's the owner of the building.
They would only know if the building owner notified them. Basically, mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a sign there. Public notice, but okay.
Did you have a question, Commissioner Gedge?
No.
Okay. You said the applicant was present. Would you like to add anything to our staff report? Will you come all the way up just so that our recorder can get it?
I'm the applicant, and the owner is with me as well. My name is Troy Thane. Pretty much, they're not relocating. They have an existing Donut Star in Draper. They're just adding and looking to expand.
Will your hours be the same as your Draper store? It looks like 5 to 5.
Yes, ma'am.
Will you have deliveries that early, or?
That I'm not sure if I'm just the contractor. Dave?
Thanks for having us. No, our deliveries actually with our contractors are all set up that they can't deliver any earlier than 6 o'clock in the morning. And so most of the deliveries we get happen somewhere 7 to 10 o'clock.
Will you tell us a little bit about your business? Is it like exclusively a donut shop, or do you have a business model where people come in and sit down?
I was going to do that parking, okay. Talking part. I'm Sharon Wharton, and this is Dave, and we do own Donut Star. We're excited to come to South Jordan. All of our customers who have heard we're coming are thrilled. South Jordan's already on our box, so people are just can't wait for it to open. As far as what we do serve pastries of all sorts, anywhere from croissants to breakfast sandwiches to donuts. And I'm missing bagels.
Yep. We have a whole drink selection too, so coffee and espresso and all that too. So. Our bulk of our business is actually before 10 o'clock in the morning. So I've actually talked to most of the tenants in the building, and they're actually excited that we're coming because their business doesn't open until later. And so the bulk of our parking is going to be when they're not even open. So.
Questions while we have the applicants up here? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to open up this item to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this issue, we'd invite you to come forward at this time. Just a reminder to state your name and where you reside for our records, and you have 3 minutes to address the commission. Is there anybody in our auditorium? Okay, let's go to our online format. Same thing, if you would like to address the commission on this item, we'd ask that you please turn on your camera and give us a wave. Okay, I don't think that we have anybody that would like to speak to this issue, so I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, any further discussion or concerns?
My only comment, it's not really a concern, but I believe there's another item on the agenda which will have the same concerns regarding the signage going up before the approval, just in case the worst effect we don't approve, and then their signage have gone up, it puts the city maybe in a precarious situation where the advertising has gone up and it may not be approved.
Staff, can you comment on that? Is that, why does that happen?
If the sign permit obviously was approved before the conditional use permit, but they put the signs up at their own risk. If they don't get approval of their business, then they've just spent money that they shouldn't have. But it's nothing that we can control. I mean, people can...
Can we encourage in the application process to...
That'd be a good idea. If I said, you may not want to actually put this up or even purchase it. But I think that it's been quite a process for them. I think they must... You can ask them for sure, but they probably had some confidence that it was going to be approved, because we couldn't find any detrimental effects of this that would prohibit it from being approved. And that's the only way it would have been denied, is if there's a detrimental effect that could not be mitigated. So I don't know if we gave them that idea that I'm pretty sure we told them that, but it's been taken a long period of time, because they originally started with a building permit and for the tenant improvement, and then we noticed the business is a restaurant, so then we also informed them at that time they had to apply for a conditional use permit before they could get their building permit approved, and that has not been approved. The tenant improvement, I don't think, is approved yet, because we wouldn't approve it until they got the conditional use permit. Our planning wouldn't have signed off on it. But the business licensing is the same. It's kind of, I'm not sure who goes first, business licensing or the conditional use permit. I think one of our concerns was they didn't have a business license yet, but then I think we were told, well, they're not going to get one unless they get the conditional use permit. So we kind of backed off on that and said, okay, fine. Well, so they've had to wait quite a long time were able to come here to get their approval. And perhaps we didn't tell them, obviously we didn't tell them that they shouldn't put a sign up, but the sign permit did get approved, and they took it around. And so definitely we can say, if this ever happens again, we should say, don't put your sign up or don't even purchase it until you can actually do this. But everything's now is just waiting for the Planning Commission to make their decision, because the tenant improvement, we've all reviewed it. Planning will put our approval on it if you grant the approval. The building department's already approved the tenant improvement. Business licensing, I think it's everybody but the planning, our approval on the business license is still waiting for a condition. So they probably want to open up as soon as they can. And they probably, I don't know if they've done any work inside there yet. They may have started some work, and so they want to have their sign up, so they can open as soon as possible. So.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I have no personal objections to this property. Just we've had experiences in the past with similar restaurants or drive-through facilities where we have either tabled it or gone back for further discussion, had the applicant come back, and just I want just to make sure that we don't give the public the perception that we've kind of already been rubber-stamped, greenlit the property before it's come through all the formal channels.
I was just going to say, these are two business owners opening up, expanding their geographic footprint. They're probably trying to mitigate risk by granting brand exposure. So having prime signage on Redwood Road is a good way to seed the market and get people talking about their business model. So I'm sure that this is likely not them being overzealous or wanting to skip steps, but just mitigate risk and generate future sales.
Adding to that, I believe there could also be factors for businesses in supply chain in getting people to install and to get signs as well. So maybe I kind of like letting the businesses assume risk if they want to, but I like being encouraging too. So.
When do we anticipate this opening? Do you have a date?
I'll let the records show that Mr. Thane said middle of March, if everything gets approved. Okay. I appreciate that the hours are offset from the other businesses. Strip mall type developments like this sometimes do become a little bit problematic as different uses come in that have surge times, but I do feel like this one will be in the early morning before most of these businesses probably are even open. So I do appreciate this energy there. Don't anticipate that it will create a parking problem. I drove by this evening and looked and there was sufficient parking. It was probably actually outside of the operating hours for this particular applicant, but that's the only comment I had. If there's no further discussion, then I'm ready for a motion.
I'll make the motion. I move that the Planning Commission, based on staff report, commission discussion, and public comment, that we approve the conditional use permit file number PLCUP20220035 with no conditions based on the findings and conclusions in the report.
I don't think I'm used to them saying things like with no conditions. I think I prefer as presented in the staff report. Is that me being fussy? Because we are conditioning that it, meets.
What if it comes back and it does?
It is an interesting way.
It needs to be revised, or a condition needs to be imposed.
Sure,
I'll change that.
I would like to.
Okay, I'll change it. Just amend my previous motion to strike with no conditions and as per the staff report.
I'm happier with that. Any other discussion? Okay, I will second that motion, Ms. Valdez.
Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
Commissioner Hollist?
Yes.
Commissioner Starks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
And Commissioner Kettmore?
Aye.
Okay. This item passes 5-0. We look forward to seeing your business come to South Jordan and enjoying what it has to offer. Thank you for coming this evening and participating in the process. That's very appreciated. All right, our next item this evening is the Bright Beginnings Child Care Site Plan. And David has our staff report.
This application is for a site plan approval for a commercial child care facility in an existing residential home. you can see this is a kind of a unique property located on 40th West, just north of 98 South or Sky Drive. It's in the R1.8 zone, but the size is approximately 1.6 acres, and so the use of a daycare on a residentially zoned property that is over an acre is a permitted use. So this is not a conditional use. This is just evaluating it based on what city code is, and as long as they meet each of those requirements, then it's an administrative action that would need to be approved. So this application was submitted towards the end of 2021. I've had a lot of conversations with the property owners and expressed concerns that they would be able to make this transition from a home occupation to a commercial child care use on this location would be very difficult. And I had doubts from the beginning that we'd even get to this point. But we, through some thorough review and quoting sections of the code to make sure that they could meet all those requirements, they indeed have checked off every single one that we've presented to them. So you can see that they're showing a parking lot that will be built on the north side of the existing house. The driveway will be widened and shifted to allow for traffic to enter and exit the parking lot, just as you'd see in any other commercial development. There's going to be landscaping, the required curbing, a place for trash enclosure, and all the requirements that you would typically see in a commercial site. They have already installed a lot of the park strip that was not done when the previous owners built the house. It was something that we had concerns for years previously, and so we're happy to see that they've already started the process of improving the property for this type of use. And then the fact that it's located on 40th West with no other access that would impact existing residential neighborhoods is something that we see as a benefit rather than a concern. So they're showing 9 parking stalls. That's the minimum requirement. Let's see. They're also in our code, even though it's not a conditional use. There are impact control measures that are put in place that add another layer of review, just to take a look at certain aspects of different types of uses, just to ensure that there aren't anything that we could see as a red flag that could cause impacts. So they were required to submit a circulation and access plan, as well as an operations plan that could be reviewed just to see how it would function and operate. There is still some work to be done. Staff is aware that some discussions have happened with the engineering department regarding further improvements of the park strip that extend up to the next intersection to the north. That's not done as far as maintenance and what would be installed there. And we've also expressed to the applicant that they need to make sure that they're working with the building department, that all the fire codes and building requirements for commercial daycare can be met on top of the proper licensing that would take place. So staff has confidence that this applicant, based on what they've already been able to accomplish, will continue to make the necessary improvements so that they can operate their business in the future. So for that reason, we are recommending approval.
Can you go back, revert back a few images so we can see them? Yes, right there. Thank you.
So is the applicant responsible for maintaining the sidewalk along that entire stretch of 40th West?
That's one of the things I spoke with the city engineer, and it looks like the city is already maintaining a lot of the park strip on the other side of 40th West, as well as there's a strip of property, that intersection to the north of this property, where it's adjacent to the canal as it goes north. That's actually owned by the city. So that would all be maintained by the city. So I believe they're working on an agreement to take over that maintenance as far as where that would stop and begin. But that's something that we're continuing to work on.
How many square feet is the home? And does that play into the number of parking spots required and how many children can be on site and employees?
So the number of employees and children on site, that's where it gets into the building code and fire code as far as how that can be met as far as entrances, exits, and any improvements that would need to be done as part of that process. We did look at the house. I believe it was just over 2,500 square feet. And so that's how it was calculated for the parking requirement.
I'm assuming that as part of their business license, that's where safety is reviewed to make sure that there's appropriate fencing between the facility and the canal and the facility and a busy road.
Yeah, so there'd be state licensing, and I believe the applicants are here, so they can definitely answer some of those detailed questions if you have questions about those things.
Okay. Questions? Let's start down here.
All of my questions are for the applicant.
Okay.
Jeremy, is there a sufficient corridor preserved for any known plans on 40th West? Like, is it going to go five lanes this far north?
Yeah, the plan is that there will be five lanes this far north, but yeah, the width is consistent along the entire corridor, so we're going to need to make it work with what we have there. We don't see this as being an issue.
Okay, great, thank you.
Just a question regarding the application back to October 2021. Is there an expiration date on applications? Are they open-ended until they are presented, or do they sunset after a certain amount of time?
The timing doesn't start until the application is approved. So once the Planning Commission approves the site plan, they have 1 year to get the necessary permits and to begin construction.
But they can have
otherwise, they have to petition for an extension. But yeah, the timetable doesn't start until after approval.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And the reason we have that is because if codes change during the time that they're still going through the process, then they're going to have to meet whatever the new codes are as well. So we don't have much of a concern about it. It's after they get approved that they wait. If they wait too long, then codes change, then we should go back and review that. But so,
okay, great. Thank you.
Sorry, Mr. Starks, I can't see you.
I know, we're having a hard time.
I feel like you had maybe a question.
For the applicant.
Okay. Was the applicant here, and would you mind coming forward?
Sebastian Arias, the applicant. Have any comments, but I'm open to any questions.
Let's start down here. Ms. Bevins.
Okay, so he mentioned we're transitioning from a home occupation license, so I'm guessing, is this a current existing in-home daycare right now, or is this a completely new venture?
It's a current in-home daycare.
Okay, and how long has that been operating?
2 years.
2 years. Okay, and I assume you're all state licensed and have all of the regulatory
yes, ma'am.
Stuff. Okay. How many kids are on site?
12.
And is this expanding the number of children that are going to be allowed? Do you plan to expand that?
Yes.
Do you know how many?
It depends on what we get approval for.
Okay.
So we have to get to the building permit stuff first for them to tell us. But I believe they said it, according to like the square footage, the estimate was between like 50 to 75.
Okay. And this is all contained within your home? Are you're not expanding that or putting anything else on the property?
Just play areas, like a park type setup. But the rest of it's all inside the house.
Okay. And he said the estimate of the house is 2,500 square feet. Is that accurate?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's all I have for right now.
And it will no longer function as a residence?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Continue on down the line. Mr. Starks? Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, at this time, we're going to open up the floor to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we invite you to come forward. Just a reminder to state your name and where you reside, and then there will be a clock that will help you keep track of time. You've got 3 minutes.
My name's Beverly Roth, and I live about three houses away, and I don't really know much about it, except I just got a letter. I just had a concern that it's not going to greatly increase the traffic because it's a two-way street right now on 40th or two-lane, and on Sky Drive is two-lane, and within a couple blocks there's an elementary school, and it gets very busy several times a day. And I live near the light, and it's kind of hard to get out sometimes. If it increases the traffic a lot, it's going to be a real problem for me. If it's not, then it won't, and I don't know because I don't know much about it, but that was my concern when I got the letter and why I'm here tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Roth. We'll ask staff about that after public comment.
My name is Lana Smith, and I live at 4029 Fair Glen, so it's approximately two houses to the west of this. We are totally opposed. I think if you would have asked all of Glenmore Village, instead of just 300 feet, you'd have hundreds of people here tonight. It is residential. It's always been residential. We've been there 35 years. We do not want commercial in that area. I don't think it's safe. I worked at Welby Elementary for 30 years. I know how busy the traffic is. 9800, when we're coming off of Stonehaven, we can't even get out onto 9800. When I was going to work, I couldn't even get out to go to work. I would wait and wait and wait, so the traffic's horrendous. Accidents, oh my goodness. They've gone through the back of my neighbor's fence twice now, which would just be across the street from this residence. They've gone through the light and torn out all the light fixtures several times, and the fencing, it's dangerous. And then right behind it, the canal, extremely dangerous. And they put up a chain link, and I believe chain link is against the law in South Jordan. I could be wrong. I read the business proposal. They said they would have, first of all, they told me only 12. We've been fighting this for a year now. They said 12. It's not 12. It's five teachers or five rooms with 12 in each one, meaning 60 students, which is a ton, plus 10 teachers. It's just massive, massive. I don't think it's safe, not in any way. I've seen too much traffic, too many accidents, and the canal is a huge concern, and it's very close, 10 feet maybe. You could ask them, 10 or 15 feet to the canal from their back door. And with all those little kids, I don't think that's safe. So mine is safety as well as we really don't want commercial. Because if they sell out, what happens next? Once it's zoned commercial, I just feel like we have no protections. In front of it, to the sides of it, behind of it, everything's residential. And I think it should stay residential, no commercial whatsoever. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Is there anybody else in our auditorium that would like to speak to this item this evening?
I'm Kevin Smith, and I live at 4029 Fair Glen Circle. I have just a few questions and concerns. I know for a while, and I don't know that it isn't still going on, that they also ran a automobile detailing business at that site. I'm wondering, is that going to continue there? The next thing is, you know, I have a real problem changing residential area to commercial. You know, particularly in our neighborhood with the state legislation that allows people to rent out bedrooms in their homes, there's been a lot of people come in and buy the homes and they're renting out the bedrooms, okay, of the homes. You know, I didn't buy here 35 years ago to have apartment complexes across my street. I didn't come here to live in an area that has commercial property. I want to know what's the rights of the citizens who live in a residential area. Granted, they've made the checklist to move to commercial, but what about our rights? And what about what we expected when we moved in the area? And that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Is there anyone else in our auditorium that would like to speak to this item? Okay, we're going to go to our online format. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we'd ask that you please turn on your camera, give us a physical wave, and I will turn the floor over to you. All right, I'm not seeing anybody on our online platform, so I'm going to bring this back to the commission, close public comments, and get some of these questions addressed. I'm actually going to start with the last one. I do have a question about transitioning this to a business use. Does this require a rezone?
It is not. It's allowed to, like I said, it's a permitted use that's allowed in residential zones, provided they meet the acre requirement. And there are actually a few instances within the city of properties that are in either residential or agriculturally zoned properties that are around or over an acre. There's even some on commercially zoned properties that are adjacent to residential that are less than an acre that have occupied businesses and within the city. But in this case, like I stated before, it is not a rezone. It's only a site plan for a permitted use.
So it's permitted use in a residential. Wouldn't there have to be a primary occupant who is residing in the home to occupy, to operate a home business?
That's the way that it currently runs now with the home occupation business license.
But I believe they can, the testimony.
They will not be living on the property. It will just be used for daycare purposes. And that is a permitted use in the residential zones. Zones have multiple different types of uses. It's not just people living in residences that are allowed to occupy a residentially zoned property. They allow schools, they allow churches, they allow parks. So there's a lot of different types of uses that can exist there.
So if they were to sell the property, it would still be residential, correct?
Correct. They couldn't operate any other type of
commercial business. No other business could come in and occupy this without coming back through this process and getting a whole different permit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there any other use that could come in, like a church or, I don't know, you just...
It would have to be a very small church, probably occupying the same building, using the same size parking lot. This property is pretty much maxed out as far as how they're able to use it because it's such an odd-shaped property.
Okay. Jeremy, we will call you up as we've got questions. Jeremy, I think I've got a lot of questions for you. Let's talk traffic. Can you please tell us the ratings of 40th and Sky and comment on that intersection potentially being hazardous or having more accidents than a typical intersection? Any information you might have?
Like any intersection, if we see that there's a spike in incidents there, we may look at like restricting some access there. So there's always potential that it could become a right-in, right-out access, but that wouldn't be the intent initially. We would keep the access configured the way it is. And then monitor it. 40th West is a major collector road, and so the bit of traffic that this would add on to 40th West is insignificant.
Can you approximate? Maybe you haven't done a traffic study, but for this type of a use, what kind of additional trips you'd see during peak hours?
If they've got 50 kids, if I'm remembering correctly, 50 kids, that's a maximum of 50 vehicles, during an hour to either pick up or drop off. And so that's what one vehicle every minute, right? Assuming even distribution. So they will need to have, like most daycares, they'll need to have a pickup and drop off plan, to make sure that they're not stacking onto 4000 West. But 4000 West is planned to have a five. It's planned to have five lanes total. So two lanes in each direction with a center median. That's coming in the future. I don't know anything else on that. Any other questions?
Has that intersection specifically been flagged as being worse than others?
No, as far as incidents, accidents. I'm certain there's accidents there. Every signalized intersection has accidents, but it's not been flagged as more than any other intersection with similar traffic volumes.
Okay, I wondered. Sky, I know Ben's right there, so that's obviously a variable that can play into something like that.
Yeah, and following it, as I keep looking at this, I'll pull it up right now and see, how it looks, but it's not been on our radar as far as anything out of the ordinary.
So along with that, Jeremy, I don't drive this road very often, so I don't know the answer to this, but is there even room on the side of the road in front of this property right now if somebody were to try to park there? Could they park there without impeding traffic currently?
I believe right now there's sufficient shoulder for them to pull over.
I drive this every day. Okay. There is an ample shoulder. It is a busy intersection.
For now.
But there is ample shoulder.
Right, and in the future, no, that's a great point. In the future, there won't be much of a shoulder.
Okay.
You know, when we go to a five-lane section, we'll be using that shoulder for the additional lane.
How many parking stalls do they have?
Nine.
Mr. Mann, have they submitted a drop-off pickup plan and indicated how they'll stack cars on their property?
Well, again, it comes down to how many the building and fire code will allow. In their business plan, they did say that it wasn't that they were going to have 50 students arrive all at the same time. It's throughout the day. There might be some that are every other day, so it's going to be spread out. So you might only have, you know, four or five cars at a time with nine parking stalls on the property.
We've faced this stacking problem with other applications many times. Can you discuss what happens if it starts stacking onto a public road, what the city does, what the police department does?
I could not speak to that because that's not something that we in the planning department would monitor.
Oh, somebody can speak to this. We discussed this more than once. Maybe it's Mr. Simonson.
I'm sorry, I missed the question.
Okay.
I think we've talked in the past that I know that our city attorney has mentioned that if it starts stacking in the road, that they will be ticketed almost immediately if it becomes an issue. So all it would take is someone to let the police know that that's an issue. They'll come out and watch it, and as soon as it starts happening, they'll ticket those people they stack in the road.
So is it not required with a site plan like this for the pickup and drop-off plan to be presented?
There's nothing that outlines how, like, the level of detail or that it has to be done to a certain specification. The combination of the business plan as well as the site plan and civil plans, staff felt was sufficient enough to evaluate how it would operate on the site coming off of the Collector Street. And similar to, I know the one in recent memory is the Raising Cane's restaurant that caused a lot of traffic when they first opened. And that's something that the restaurant, they had to deal with. And I believe that there was some payments to the city for time for police to direct traffic. So I think it's something that if it becomes an issue, I'm sure enforcement might get the applicant or property owners to change how they operate.
Okay. Moving down, any questions down this way, concerns that weren't addressed?
Did you? No, I think I would just add generally, and this may be a little bit repetitive, I live very close to this intersection, and I can speak firsthand to the amount of volume and traffic, especially during peak hours, as well as elementary. As I'm picking my kids up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it is very packed. And so I love the enterprising idea behind the business and expansion. And certainly there are, business opportunities. This is a great business model. However, I don't feel like it's additive to the community. And given the current infrastructure that's in place, I don't know that that's conducive to the expansion of this business. I don't know that we can handle more traffic volume safely. While maintaining good standards in the community, I think it makes it a bit less livable. So that would be my my personal insight on it.
So as far as issues that I don't think we directly addressed, one person, I forgot the gentleman, talked about canal safety.
I think we indirectly talked about that when I asked about the business plan or the fire code would capture that.
Oh, okay.
But there was a comment about fencing. You are correct. They indicated that there was a chain link fence and wanted to know if that's permitted in the area. Can you comment on that, Mr. Mann?
I believe they installed a chain link fence in the front yard at one point, and code enforcement was called out, and they removed it and replaced it with a vinyl fence. Which is allowed according to code.
So they are up to code at this time?
That's correct.
Okay. And then there was a comment about other businesses operating off of this property. Does this business plan allow any other type of business, auto, car repair?
Auto and car repair is not an allowed use, even as a home occupation.
Okay. Did we get everything?
Commissioner Hollis, can I make a comment on
please.
That? The most significant thing that we have heard tonight is that this is a permitted use. And I can understand where our residents are coming from. Wait a minute. I bought a house so that I could live in a residential neighborhood without businesses. But as has been pointed out, legislative bodies from time to time make exceptions to that. The most notable exception that we get quite often in the city, and it doesn't even come to the Planning Commission, are sober living homes. Those are operating businesses, and they come right into neighborhoods. And the Congress of the United States has passed the Fair Housing Act, and there you go. I mean, it's in a residential area. And the fact what we're seeing here is something that our local legislative body has said, if it's over an acre, we're going to make it a permitted use even in a residential zone. And we can all sit here and speculate about why they made that decision, but they did. And so long as the applicant complies with the site plan issues and complies with all the things that Mr. Mann has been pointing out, we can't overturn what the legislative body has enacted.
Thank you, Mr. Simonson. So Mr. Simonson issues us a good reminder that we are not elected, and so our powers are limited to a significant degree if code and ordinance is met. I did have one more question. Jeremy, have you been able to look up the service rating for those roads?
Currently, 4000 West is at level of service C with its traffic volumes right now.
Okay.
And we're trying to keep it at D or higher is the city's goal with our level of service.
Okay. Are there any other questions or concerns?
I know there's been concerns with their parking plan and how many kids are on site and how many teachers are on site that will be taking those 9 parking spots. Do we have the purview as the commission to table this and request that kind of in-and-out parking pickup drop-off plan? Or are we just approving this or denying it?
You can table it if the information isn't available to you tonight, but and so I think that you need to turn to Mr. Mann and any other members of staff that have that information.
We can also ask the applicant about their plan and how staggered arrivals are.
Well, if there's 5 teachers on site, plus any staff and admin, that's at least 5 of those 9 always taken.
So do you want to discuss this with the applicant?
Yes, I would.
Would you be willing to come up and answer some questions? Thank you. I'll let you lead.
Sure. So it was mentioned, I know you guys didn't mention this, but it was mentioned somewhere that there's a plan for 5 classrooms. Is that correct?
That's not what we mentioned, though. That's
yes.
One of the comments that was said.
But is there a plan for the number of staff and admin that will be on site?
So it all depends on how many kids we are approved for, and then we'll just work based on that.
Okay.
But I'm thinking, so we serve right now school-age children as well. And so just with them, you know, we pick them up. So that doesn't create traffic for, like, drop-off or anything like that, because we are the ones picking them up. And then, so we are also considering, like, for example, having at least 3 classrooms, you know, and then We are a family business, so my husband will be one of the administrative staff. I'm a teacher, so we get there in the same car. So we are only occupying one, you know, and if traffic is ever a problem, we can always, like, work with the city, you know, and I appreciate all the comments. I just wanted to say also, we are not like a school, you know, we don't have a set drop-off time. They can drop off at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m., and right now, because we have been in that location for almost 3 years now, but I have been in business, like home occupation, you know, in daybreak before, always in South Jordan for almost 10 years now. And parents, like my parents, they drop off at different times. Most of them work from home. And so they drop off at 8, or I have a lot that drop off at 11 a.m., you know, different times. I have even parents that only use it for, like, run errands and things like that. So they just drop off at, like, even 3 p.m., they pick up at 5, you know. So also for pickup is different times as well during the day. We don't have, like, a set time. So I hope we don't, like, I appreciate the comments and everything, but I want to reassure everyone that we are not looking to increase traffic or anything like that, and we are willing to work with the city and everyone, even the neighbors, you know, to make sure that we are not an inconvenience for them.
And do you offer nighttime care, or
is it just business hours? No, we don't. No, just business hours, yeah.
Okay.
And we are closed weekends also, so we're only open Monday through Friday. Right now, we're open from 8 to 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have any kind of written or detailed pickup and drop-off plan that you can provide the city or anything?
I could do it, but it wasn't required when we applied or anything. And we have been working on this since 2021, and it's been a very long process. So if that was required, I hope, like, I wish it was mentioned before, because it's been very, very long and also very, very expensive and extremely expensive. And so we hope that this gets resolved quickly, but if it's required, we can provide it, you know, but it wasn't required before or mentioned or anything. But it's very simple, you know, we don't have like a specific times or anything. And parents usually, they drop them off, you know, I've never, like, in 10 years, and I work in childcare before, I've never had a parent, you know, like three parents arrive at the same time, never in my life. So usually it's one parent, you know, they leave and they have never created like any accidents or traffic issues or anything. Even right now, having the space I have right now, you know, with the parents I have. And I'm not looking also to be like a big center, because that's not my business mission or vision. I'm looking to be more like a family-oriented family childcare program. And we want to have like a family feel, you know, family feeling for the kids, you know, like a smaller groups. We don't want a lot bigger groups. We want like maybe 12 kids per classroom and things like that, keeping it very slow. We're very small. And so that's pretty much it. We are not looking to be like 70 kids or 80 kids or anything like that. Even if we approve for that, we're looking to be like more like a family, like a small program also.
Do most of your customers park and bring their children in, or is there any sort of a pull up and drop off?
So actually, with the planning we have, it's going to be pretty much like a drive through, you know, like it's like that. So they can park as well. They have both options. So I honestly don't think it's going to be like an issue with traffic or anything like that, but I can definitely address that as well.
And you do understand that if your customers start lining up on 40th West, yes, that police will be contacted.
Absolutely, yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. We take that very seriously, yeah.
Even right now, as we've been operating for the whole time, like they all park in our driveway to pick up and drop off. We don't have any parking on the road.
No, yeah.
Okay. Questions down this way for the applicant? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioners, further questions or discussion that needs to happen on this item?
I'm going back to what we, in our duties as planning commission, are allowed to do and not allowed to do. You know, it's a site plan that we have in front of us. So it's not a conditional use. It's not a rezone. And so the various standards, as Mr. Simonson laid out, that we, if, you know, they meet the standards, we have, you know, we're kind of tied to what we can do as well. And I guess my one question would be is, As I think Mr. Mann has explained, you know, a traffic plan was not required as part of this application process. So I don't know if we could table or deny based on them not submitting something that was not required.
Staff, can we make the request? This traffic is probably the number one thing we hear about from residents if it's near residential. Can we request or let applicants know that any information that helps alleviate those concerns or shows thought in the process that's gone into mitigating that is desirable and in their favor?
I'm sure Jeremy could probably speak more to this, but...
Because we do often see traffic plans.
Yeah, I think with the fact that they're already operating on a smaller scale for this type of use, they have experience running it at this location. Like they had stated, their efforts are not to create a massive use right off the bat. It's to grow, a little by little, evaluate it based on how it runs. And like I had said, the business plan, in addition to the site plan, staff felt was sufficient. During the engineering review, the engineering department did not feel that a traffic study would be required. It'd probably be a little bit of an overkill for this type of use.
Okay. Anything else, commissioners? Okay, then I'm ready for them. Go ahead.
Maybe just to affirm, like, I agree, like, it's a site plan. It looks like it meets all the requirements, and it's a tricky lot, and I admire the creativity and the fortitude to stick with it for a couple of years to work it out. So a solution, and I understand that comes with impacts to neighbors and just like the feedback that needs to go to your elected official. Sit down and talk to them and share that. We are not elected. We're not elected, and so we basically are here to help make sure that certain requirements and regulations are followed. And especially that's the case in the site plan type thing. So I'm, given all that, I'm enthusiastic to support it in that constraint.
Do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion. So I move that the Planning Commission approve file number PLSPR202100, and I wrote over the top, 228, thank you, for the operation of a commercial child care facility located at 9755 South, 4000 West.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there any discussion? Okay, I will second that motion. Ms. Valdez?
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollist?
Yes.
Commissioner Starks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
And Commissioner Bevins?
Yes.
Okay, this item passes 5-0. I would like to thank both the applicant and the residents for participating this evening. Information that you provide us, I hope, helps staff provide information that you need to help make this successful and to know what tools you have available should issues arise. All right, our last administrative item this evening is the conditional use permit for an animal service use in the commercial corridor CC zone, and Andrew has our staff report.
Thank you, commissioners. Before you, is an application for a conditional use for Kibbles and Cuts, which is an animal services use. Their services would fall under the grooming services for just cats and dogs. The property is located in an existing space that is down where 1055 West intersects off of South Jordan Parkway. For business reference, Planned Parenthood is in the furthest south unit for context, and they're about two spaces to the north of them. Currently, the property is owned CC in a commercial use next to two vacant parcels that are also CC and the adjacent R1.8 residential zone to the south. Just to point out, the property that you show here that's listed as 1078 West, 10550 South is zoned residential R1.8. Its current use is a residential duplex. And then adjacent to that starts the single-family residential developments moving west. The current site plan shown here of those uses that are in place, the parking requirements based upon uses over time have changed in the CC zone. Throughout the past, since its creation, it's been mainly retail, office, and medical uses, each having their own parking requirement. Since they're all permitted uses, it kind of throws that off a little bit. However, parking isn't a concern with staff. I've driven various points of the day to that particular property, and you can usually find space either in the north end, the south end by Planned Parenthood, and even throughout the middle a little bit. Based upon their usage and their requirement, they would need 3 stalls, which you should be easily able to find in the middle. And their business hours, typically no more than 4 people or so are on site throughout the whole day, and probably no longer than 5 to 10 minutes dropping off and checking in their pets. Right now, there are no prior uses in place, which is why we've brought it before you for approval on animal services. Their proposed floor plan, their holding kennels has the capacity for 12 animals at a time, corresponding with the applicant / business owner who's present tonight. That is a rare occurrence, but they do have the capacity for that if it does ever happen. Typically, they do have other locations throughout the valley, and that's not a practice that occurs with them with their scheduled appointment services. Usually, you're going to have, on average, somewhere around 5 or 6 throughout the day split between their full-time groomers. They will receive delivery in their services, which is it's explored a little bit more in the operations as part of your packet. As to what materials they would receive, what they order, we do have a city ordinance in place that does restrict all deliveries between the hours of 7 a.m. and 10 p.m., all access to the unit would be in the front. There's no rear yard access. And one of the major concerns that initially with the particular use, going back to the site plan, in the southwest corner, the adjacent residential use is a multifamily duplex as it exists today, which is adjacent to a empty parking lot for the development. From Kibbles and Cut space, it's about 50 feet from the nearest corner. And then to the actual single-family developments, it's a little over 106 approximately. Mm. So as with the operations that were provided in further detail in your packet, staff doesn't feel that this particular use would create a huge issue of concerns and none have been brought to our attention thus far, corresponding with code enforcement and opportunity for the public to respond. And so staff recommends approval of the application.
Thank you, Andrew. Is this type of a service specifically called out as requiring a conditional use, or is anything that's not included on a specific list require a conditional use?
The CC zone has changed over time with the current uses of medical, office, and retail are permitted. The animal services has remained consistent as requiring a conditional use permit.
Okay. That was my main question. Questions?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm told the applicant is present. Is that you? Why don't you come on up and introduce yourself to us? I like that you also wore the colors of the day.
Well, so Andrew and I did not coordinate, contrary to what might be appearing. Jeremy Fenland, business owner. This is Mary, one of my managers. So, okay. And I don't have any other comments unless you have questions.
They do. So we'll start down here.
Just, it says that Sandy is your busiest location. How many other locations do you have?
So we have a shop in Highland, in West Jordan, and in Sandy.
So this will be your fourth location?
Correct.
Okay. That's all I have.
Jason. So,
and we were lucky enough to put our sign up before. Was that your question?
No comment. My wife maybe have let me know about that when I came, because this is my favorite.
I do have some feedback about that, if you want it.
No. I think we addressed that, so I'm glad you could pick up on that on our previous application. But I know this strip mall, are you guys going to be making any improvements inside the building? I'm just thinking like of noise mitigation. Like, I've personally used the PT facility there. You know, it's a medical practice. Will be any way in case, you know, dogs bark, you know, to, or have you had that type of experience with your other locations where it's kind of the noises bled into the adjoining buildings? Do you have ways to mitigate? Just, again, we had noise with another application this evening as well. So just.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. In any of our other locations, all of our locations, none of them are self-standing. All of them are in strip mall type applications like this. And we haven't had any complaints or issues from any of the landlords in the course of 5 years.
Okay. And then just a recommendation I would have, just because even though traffic doesn't seem to be busy, try to pick up a pizza right there. So I would just recommend working with the property owner to maybe get some dedicated stalls, one or two for your business.
Okay.
Just because, especially in the evening, afternoon hours, just as a recommendation, having utilized that parking lot a lot.
So thanks for the feedback.
To help you guys out,
just yeah, absolutely.
I would recommend that. So, and that's all
I didn't know that was possible, so that's good.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, at this time, we're going to open up this item to public comment. If you've joined us this evening to speak to this item, we'll invite you to come forward. Yes, no? Okay, let's go to our online format. If you've joined us online and you would like to address the commission on this item, we just ask that you please turn on your camera and give us a wave. Mr. Jarman, Ms. Bown, you're always welcome. All right, I don't see anybody wanting to address the commission on this item, so I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the commissioners. I would just like to note, I appreciated the plan that the applicant submitted. It provided a lot of details that were relevant and gave me a better understanding of what's going to go on, how many people they expect to be there, the fact that animals aren't there overnight. I think that was a good ad. So thank you for providing that. Anything else?
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion, please.
Please.
Based on the staff report and recommendation in our discussion this evening, I move that we approve the conditional use permit file number PLCUP 2023-00-002. With no conditions based on, I'm going to strike that.
I would like you to, thank you.
Sorry, 002, based on the findings and conditions listed in this report.
Okay, you said conditions instead of conclusions.
Sorry, yes, please change the findings and conclusions listed in this report.
All right, we have a motion. Are we comfortable with the modification that Mr. Gedge made? Okay, and then just staff. Apparently, we don't like the term with no conditions, so maybe we can avoid that in the future. All right, I will second that motion. Ms. Valdez?
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Stark?
Yes.
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
And Commissioner Bibb?
Yes.
Okay, this item passes 5-0. We wish you luck and welcome you to our city. Thank you for participating this evening. All right, we now are going to change and move into our legislative public hearings. The only item that we have is the South Jordan Streetscape Master Plan Resolution for South Jordan, and Mr. Hill will present our report.
Thank you, commissioners, and thank you for allowing us some of your time this evening, especially on a fun holiday. I am Colby Hill. I'm the Associate Director of Parks, Trails, and Open Space for the city. And we have worked with Mark Morris and Voda Landscape and Planning. He's our consultant to put together a streetscape master plan. We worked together as a team of both city staff and Mark and his staff to come up with what we feel is a good plan with regards to some goals that we wanted to set for our streetscapes. Mark has a presentation that he'll share with you, and then, of course, we're open to any questions that you might have. And I'll turn the time over to Mark, if that's okay.
Great. Thanks, Colby. Good to be with you this evening. As Colby mentioned, my name is Mark Morris. I am a landscape architect with Voda Landscape and Planning. We've spent the last several months working with city staff to develop a streetscape master plan. As you know, the trees that line the city's streets are a really important part of the brand of what South Jordan is. It's here on your logo behind you. Trees really have an important impact on the community, and this particular process was really focused on the streetscape that the city maintains. So just to clarify, this is only the corridors and the property that the city maintenance crews maintain. So this doesn't apply to residential neighborhoods or other privately maintained streetscapes. We worked with several of the city's staff as far as coordination. Colby led the effort here, coordinating with urban forestry, maintenance, a lot of different voices, several work sessions to kind of work through what are the issues that need to be resolved and how do we make a plan for implementation over time. We won't read through all of these, but generally the goals and objectives from this process were to, number one, reduce water usage for park strips that the city maintains. As you're aware, we have growing issues around water usage. Majority of this, these streetscapes that are maintained is Kentucky bluegrass, which is kind of the most consumptive crop that this state produces. So reducing that and making a plan to gradually phase that out from the city's maintained streetscapes, as well as improving the look of the city streets. Reducing maintenance time and increasing the attractiveness of these landscapes, those were also some key goals for this process. Xeriscape, generally, we won't get into the weeds too much with Xeriscape, but really Xeriscape can reduce the amount of water usage drastically. It's estimated between 50 and 75% reduction in the use of water over what we would call conventional landscape. Xeriscape does not mean that it's going to be cactus and gravel. What Xeriscape really means is you're grouping by water need for plants. So the overall approach was one of converting this to Xeriscape design. As part of this process, we looked at things as kind of the nitty-gritty of the irrigation systems that service these streetscapes. The takeaway that you can take from this is the intent is to, as these streetscapes are converted, that we will have the trees and the understory plants on two separate valves. What that does is during times of drought, when we have to make decisions and we have reductions in what water we can use, we can operate the water that's going to the trees separately. And so keeping the trees alive, even in times of drought, also the plant material below can be replaced far more readily. The focus of this project, I would say, was coming up with a process that could be easily duplicated, rather than spending a lot of time redesigning every linear foot of the city. The intent was to come up with a clear process. So city staff can target a corridor and say, here is where we're focusing our attention this year as far as conversion. And then that process, it really clearly spells out how to work through that, through those steps. Working with urban forestry, we've developed a few street tree lists and plant lists that during that process staff would be selecting from. The determining factor here is really the size of these park strips or medians. Working through through some of those questions, selecting plants that are going to be lush and look green and have, again, that feeling of it's cared for and it's maintained, but it plants that won't require weekly maintenance, lots of water, those types of things. Plant selection criteria, we really focused on low water, simple maintenance, a wide spread, so something that a single plant could cover a good portion of the streetscape, and also salt tolerance. A lot of these maintained landscapes are on very busy corridors through the city, and snow removal and dealing with all of that in the winter months is a clear factor. We, again, won't get too far into the process there, but what we've done is kind of spelled out something that's easily replicated. So each year, city staff can target different corridors, go through this process. At its core, it's a modular system. And so the city staff can say, okay, we are converting 2,000 linear feet of a particular corridor. These modules can be duplicated and very easily tackle the job ahead, which is converting a pretty large amount of landscape in the city. We don't need to go through all that. The master plan itself has a few renderings that kind of show what that conversion might look like. There's a range of sizes of these park strips that the city maintains. Most of them fall into some pretty clear categories, and so the selection of trees and plants was really based on how much space we have to work with. Prioritization, I would say, is something that perhaps we could have some discussion on. We had several discussions both with city staff and with the council last month to talk over how do we prioritize these corridors. There was a good deal of back and forth. We came up with a prioritization plan that kind of focuses on first priority, second priority, third priority corridors. The first priority corridors are really those that are the really visible east-west corridors through the city. Coordinating and syncing that up with any road projects by UDOT or others that might impact that. The last thing we want to do is spend city dollars on making a really great landscape and then having UDOT say, surprise, we're going to tear this all out to add a lane. So having that discussion to make sure that coordination is happening. So you can see the red here are those first priority corridors. There was a segment of 2700 West that was identified as kind of a test case sort of before those first priority corridors happen. Having that as kind of the first approach, learn some things, maybe iron out any issues with the process before we tackle a more heavily trafficked corridor like the others. Redwood Road we put in that third priority category with some ongoing Google Fiber work in that corridor, waiting until that mess is behind us before tackling that. If that finishes more readily, that could easily move into a second priority column.
We might have lost battery.
Okay, I think we've got one more slide, so if we can get it. As far as reporting on the maintenance responsibility was one discussion point. One of the key goals of this process was to determine how much of the city maintained streetscapes really, according to the city's ordinances, should be maintained by the property owner. There's some pretty clear definition in your city code about that. And what we've done with this, So we've generated a couple maps that show where some of those segments might be. That's not to say that the city is going to just go to the property owner and say, this is yours now, but really to just open up the discussion to say, there are some segments that according to ordinance should be maintained by the property owner. So the green on this map are those those portions that are currently maintained by the city. The red on the map are some of those segments that that discussion should be had as they're updated.
And if there's nothing?
If there's nothing...
If there's not a color, what does that mean?
Oh, it just means it's not maintained by the city.
Okay.
So there's a significant amount that is already maintained by private property owners. In January, we had a discussion just like this with City Council. The focus there, I would say, was really kind of talking about that coordination with city departments, different benefits for Xeriscape. I think the council saw a lot of this as an opportunity to educate the city, the public about what Xeriscape is and why we all need to work together. We have a lake that's drying up day by day, and the less we kind of pull out of that at kind of high levels, the better off we'll all be. That discussion about how this is communicated to the public, making sure that as these projects happen, there's signage or messaging about what's happening, making sure that people understand why this is happening and what those benefits are and benefits to the community. And I think that's our last. That is the last one. Okay.
I do have a question. Sure. It goes back to section 4.2, the process. Hmm. Item number 3, site preparation, talks about the removal of turf. You stated that, mm-hmm. as well as pavement, dead trees, et cetera. And yet I live right by the canal improvement that just happened on 22nd West and about 94th and 98th. They totally redid those park strips and mostly installed pavement. Tree, it does not follow what I'm seeing here at all. Is that going to be redone, or is that more like what's really going to be installed everywhere else? Because that doesn't match the renderings you've shown.
Sure. So city engineering has some existing standards for those types of projects. The intent is that those any new improvements would follow these standards. I can't speak to whether they'll come back and redo some of those sections that have been recently updated. But
can you comment?
Yeah. 2200 West. There was initially some plans to do something similar to what you're seeing here. Due to some extenuating circumstances, the trees and the plants were pulled from the project with the intent to come back and put them in later.
Okay, I'll be completely honest. I don't like what I saw there. I think it contributes to the urban temperature rise that you see. Mm-hmm. I think what you're proposing here addresses the water concerns while still putting in foliage that helps combat that.
Yeah, we agree. And we have every intent. We had to accept the trees, so the trees were planted somewhere else because they were already delivered.
You planted my trees somewhere else?
We did.
Are you serious?
We did. With the intent of coming back and putting trees in again.
But as a second priority.
It hurts. Might be.
This hurts.
Yeah.
No, I just say make a modification to the recommendation.
First priority.
We'll be moving that up.
Okay, I have 3 questions. One, you talked about a lot of it's like the Kentucky bluegrass. Has there been any consideration to like backseed that in like before we get there to kind of combat and add some of those more drought tolerant types of grasses that could consume less water while we wait for this process to...
Sure. We have considered it. When UDOT expanded 114 South or built 114 South, we actually put in a drought-tolerant grass on 114. The maintenance of a grass like that is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. The intent is for it to be a little bit longer. Public did not like that, and we ended up cutting it, and so it okay. consumes as much water as any fair. Other grass. The other thing that we, to keep in mind, current park strips are okay, but Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District has required the city to adopt different standards. So anytime we're doing work on a new park strip, we would be required to follow those standards, which does not allow grass.
Okay. Second, I don't know what the scientific name of them is, but like the flowering pear trees, do you know what I'm talking about? Are we putting any of those in? Because they smell so nasty, and I don't want to.
No, they are not on our list.
But okay.
That makes me very happy. We talk about urban forestry, diversification is key.
Yeah.
And our city already has enough flowering pears, and so it's been removed from the list.
Fantastic. Last question. What did you call it? Your corridor prioritization, is there any consideration being given to areas that already are requiring attention? I know there's a section of 3200 West where all of the trees are dead, and the neighbors have been told the city is going to come in and replace them this spring. Are they going to replace them with this, or are they just going to stay on the third prioritization
I have some trees they can have.
Your trees are planted. We will approach each location separately, and we'll look at it. It's good to know that 3200 West is a concern. It's something that we can look at. I think our approach to the prioritization is it's a great recommendation for us to follow, and if we can do that, we will. However, there may be some circumstances where we're looking at other properties and shifting things around.
Okay, but they're not just going to come in and replace them with whatever was there before and then 2 years from now come in and replace all of it again.
No.
Right, okay.
No.
Okay.
And even if the trees do get replaced this spring, they would stay there. So our intent, we're not removing any trees unless they're dead. We will xeriscape around the trees and put the new irrigation in for the existing trees.
Okay.
I think you've answered this, but is one of the concerns with variation to avoid disease coming in and taking out every tree?
Yeah, yep, okay. That's exactly that's the reason for diversification, beauty and for diseases.
Okay, let's continue down.
How long will it take, do you think, to get through all three priorities? Rough timeline.
It depends on funding. And what we're able to get with regards to funding. So we will make requests. We have requests in for this upcoming fiscal year, which starts in July. I think if the budget passes, we're looking at around $300,000 to $400,000. We're also researching grants to see what we can get with regards to water conservation. There's quite a few out there that we'll be able to match because we're funding money already. But it really depends on funding and then what our costs are for installation. It would be very difficult to put a date on it, but we'll move as fast as possible.
Estimated, what he's asking. Are we saying 5 years, 15, 20?
Exactly, like that magnitude, 5, 10.
I think it would be between 5 and 10.
Okay, great. And then do you have the slide early on in the presentation talked about 50 to 75% savings for xeriscape. Do you have a sense from my understanding and for this record, how many gallons of water would that save in a given year?
Millions of gallons.
As a percentage of how much we already use for all of our landscaping, what do you think that would be?
Like 5%.
5% or 50%.
Well, most of our parks are Kentucky bluegrass. They're very thirsty parks. And I can tell you that we've done some calculations on our park strips. I don't have those numbers, and I should have had them here, but it is millions. Compared to the rest of our parks, we have, I think, over 60 miles of park strips that, average between 5 to 8 feet in width. It doesn't compare to the park space, but it is millions. Maybe what I can mention to you also is we also have plans to do something similar in our parks. We've already identified multiple parks where we plan to make some changes, it's not reflected in the streetscape master plan, but it is part of our water conservation plan. And so in addition to this water that will be saved, we'll also be starting to convert some of our parks, leaving some space for recreation. You have to have grass to recreate on, but removing the unusable space and doing something different. It would be very hard to put a number on the comparison between our parks and our park strips.
I just wanted to put that savings into context. And it's good to know that's just the start of it. And I know we have to align with the Conservancy District because they are our source of water, primary source of water. And what the designs that you have look good to me. I was actually eyeing the inventory. I'm like, maybe I'd put that tree in in my yard. Okay. My last question is in the area of, you talked about salt tolerance. Thank you for bringing that up. What about when a snowplow just goes and throws snow? It doesn't always stay on the curb. It can get thrown over. Is hardiness of these weights, plants on the ground, is that going to be an issue, especially as you consider funding to do new conversions if you have to repair?
Yes, short answer, yes. In looking at the plants that have ended up on the list, none of them are like a woody shrub or something that would get damaged by the snow. They're all perennial. They'll come back every year. for the most part, they're things that are going to, you know, be cut all the way to the ground on an annual basis. So that sort of snowplow damage was part of that kind of consideration.
Okay, and I imagine if it did become an issue and it did affect funding, that the two departments would be talking.
Yeah, the good news is we're the same department, so
okay.
It'll be an internal battle.
Smaller Christmas parties, I guess. All right, thank you.
On the properties that will need to be start being maintained by the adjoining property owner, and you know, the notification will go out to them, for those property owners that might have financial instability or inability to pay for the improvements, will there be any type of grant or funding application process for them to assist with the improvements?
I appreciate that question, and maybe just a little bit of clarification. Our intent is not to go to the homeowners and say, you're now responsible for this park strip. Some of those have been made through agreement when we've purchased right away for sidewalks, for park strips, for streets. The intent is just to show, make us aware, hey, you have this many miles of park strips, you're maintaining this many miles of park strips, but the code says you should only be maintaining this much. We want to make sure that we're aware of that. We have no intent at the moment to go to the homeowners and say, you're now responsible for this park strip. It's just so that we're aware of what our resources are being spent on, and we can articulate that so that as we're asking for funding, it's a little bit easier to do that.
Okay. I guess the beauty of going last is that everyone took my word, so no questions.
Sorry, Nathan gave me one more question. Based on what Nathan just asked, as people come through and develop some of these areas, there's one area I noticed that is currently being developed into a new neighborhood that you have marked red. Are you going to have those developers and those new neighborhoods maintain those park strips, or is the city still just going to maintain that park strip?
Good question. Our practice has been anytime we're maintaining a park strip, 114 South is a really great example. Parts of Redwood Road are another good example. As businesses come in, those usually get turned over to the developer. Yep.
Great, thank you.
All right, any other questions? These two right now.
Just real quickly, as you turn those over, do you design the sprinklers and the valves to be operated independently or?
Yeah, independently. Yep.
I mean, by the property owner,
yep.
they are able to, so you keep it within the bounds of, okay.
Yeah, it becomes sometimes troublesome when our irrigation system continues, but it usually just goes through their property, and then we'll maintain on either side. But as more gets developed, we just start cutting things off and they take over. So, okay. Yeah.
All right, and just to confirm once more, the additional pavement in park strips is not a part of this plan, that you're actually targeting removing it.
I don't know about removing it.
Item 3 talks about the removal of dead trees and pavement.
Then we
22nd 100 West specifically.
Between 94th and 98th.
Yes.
Right there, right?
Right there.
I got to get your trees in first.
I'm serious. It does say site preparation, removal of turf, pavement, and dead trees. So
I think so. 2200 West will be an interesting one because it was just put in. And so.
But it's terrible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I don't disagree with you. I wish we would have been able to do the plants at the same time. But. Because the concrete was just barely put in, this new concrete, we may need to have a conversation with our city administration and have them give us some direction on whether or not they think it would be wise to tear out a huge investment that we just put in to just put in another investment. We can still do the plants, and we may revisit 2200 West at some point, but it, public money towards it just, I'm not sure how we'll approach that one.
Just let them know Michelle Hollis said so.
Well, okay, here's my question, and I ask this for the benefit of citizens who comment during public comment. Who would a concerned resident reach out to discuss this issue with?
They could talk to me.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
So Mr. Hill.
Please, yeah.
All right.
We love having conversations with residents.
Okay.
The more minds that participate in, we just get better solutions.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, any other questions? Okay, then at this time I'm going to open up this item to public comment. I am going to open it up to those in the auditorium. I know that many of our staffers are residents. If any of you have anything you'd like to add, we'll let you do so formally. Mr. Simonson, this is when you would have an opinion.
No, I don't really have anything except I'm taking this list of trees home.
You and Steven.
And we have a bunch of trees that we have to plant in this spring, so this is a good source for us. And I will say that I agree with everything Commissioner Hollis has said about 2200. I live really close.
So let it be shown on the record, Ms. Valdez, bolded, please. All right. Can we go to our online format? Do we have anybody online that would like to address the commission on this item? Mr. Jarman or Ms. Bown? All right. Then I'm going to close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Commissioners, do we have further discussion or questions, clarifications that we need on this item? Okay. I've had my piece, so I'm ready for a motion.
I'll make it. I recommend the adoption of Resolution 2023-11, adopting the South Jordan Streetscape Master Plan for the City of South Jordan.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion? Okay, I will second that motion. Ms. Valdez?
Commissioner Brevins?
Yes.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Starks?
Yes.
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
And Commissioner Campbell?
Aye.
Okay. This passes 5-0. Thank you for sticking to the end. I hope your significant others, families still love you. Same with staff, same with ours. Do we have any other business this evening? Do you have an ARC meeting?
No.
Okay.
No, we did not.
What does it look like in 2 weeks?
That's a great question.
I wish I could say. I don't know. I don't. I think there's maybe at least one item.
These guys left.
Those two left. I don't think David has anything. Andrew might. I think Demir has one that was going to be on this meeting, but it got moved, so maybe
we were just wondering if Demir still worked for the city. We haven't seen him so long.
He did take a
trip.
It was a 3-week trip, a 2 or 3 week trip to Europe. So he came back, and so he's still alive.
All right, that's
but,
good.
I don't have anything on the schedule for the next meeting, so it may be light on that.
We're okay with that. All right. Commissioners? All right. Then I move that we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? All right. Thank you, staff.